Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to Metron Live Podcast, coming to you from beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta. Metron people, would you give the Metron Live people a big hand and let them know that we're glad they are podcasting today. Our title this month of the series is Choose Life. We're taking that from Deuteronomy chapter 30. The rest of the title is Creating a Better Reality by Taking Full Ownership of Your Current One. I think probably in 46 years of preaching, I think I've probably referred to the first three chapters of Genesis, if not more than anything else, at least the most Old Testament I've ever referred to. I definitely see Genesis 1, 2, and 3 as the thesis of the Bible. I also want to say that when you read Genesis and Revelation, you've got to remember they're allegorical. These are not things to be taken literal. When you start thinking about a literal serpent speaking and that sort of thing, you really miss the point. And the literalists sort of hijacked the revelation. Eastern people were mystics. So when they talked about, like when John saw a crystal river or a seven-headed dragon or these kind of things, these weren't literal things. They were symbolic. Even in Joel's prophecy where he talks about the moon will be turned to blood and the sun will be darkened, if you go back and read how these people thought, he was speaking prophetic imagery. He wasn't saying these were literally things that were going to take place. The Bible doesn't even really predict the end of the world. It talks about the end of an age, the end of a Mosaic age, the end of the law. So when people read into it and they try to literalize things that were meant to be spiritually discerned, you create this weird hybrid that becomes what we call evangelical Christianity, where people think there's a literal thousand-year millennium. When the scripture talks about, uses the word thousand, he's talking about infinite, where he says God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. He's not talking about literally 1,000 hills that God owns. Or when he says the mercy of the Lord is to your children and to 1,000 generations. A thousand was in the ancient mind just technically meant infinity. So I'm saying that to say I went back this week, and I'm visiting something in Genesis 3. I'm telling you, if you had asked me a week ago, is there anything in Genesis 3 you haven't seen, I would say, no, I think I'm an aficionado in Genesis 3. I think I got that. I've written at least two of my books have been about that, so there's really nothing else in there. Well, guess what? There was more. That diamond has a lot of facets on it, and you turn it just a little bit, and it catches a whole other light. And I don't know if you call this spirit, Holy Spirit, intuition, inner voice, whatever. I don't try to name it anymore. The voice spoke to Adam, and he said, you just tell him I am sent you. So whatever the I am is, whoever the I am is. This doesn't happen to me every morning, because when I wake up in the morning, Ken leaves earlier than me, and I usually don't hear him leave. And so I probably get a couple more hours after that. And then when I wake up, I lay there for a minute and think, what day is it? Then I get up, check my messages, see what's going on, turn on the news. I have my little routine. But there are some mornings I wake up, and this happened to me Thursday morning, where I literally feel like Revelation is sitting there looking at me waiting to wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Because when I opened my eyes, I was aware of the presence. And the presence just speaks to me about things I'm not thinking about. So when I woke up, before I had a chance to think, let me turn on the news, see what's happened now, because that's, I hate to say it, but that's what I think. Like, what's happened in the last 24 hours? Instead, I woke up and clear as a bell, I heard, the serpent didn't tell Adam he was naked. What? I don't even know what day it is yet. What are we talking about? I didn't go to bed thinking about Adam and Eve and meditating Genesis 3. Honestly, I haven't even read it in a while. I refer to it a lot, but sometimes you go back and read something you refer to and you think, well, I forgot that was in there or whatever. Genesis 3 is after Adam and Eve eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It begins by saying that God comes to walk with Adam in the cool of the day, as was his custom. This is after Adam and Eve had eaten, and the all-knowing, omniscient God still comes to walk with him in the cool of the day. That's, first of all, important. And those of you that have heard my voice, you know how many times I've talked about God brought the animals to Adam to see what he would name them. Whatever Adam called them, that's what God called them. And there's a whole teaching in that. And frankly, I'm not bragging, but I'm the only person I've ever heard teach on that. I'm just telling you, I've never heard anybody else talk about Adam naming the animals and what the significance of that was. Because what that says to me is whatever you call something is what Spirit calls it. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but today, everything Judy did was good today, but the thing that just, I mean, woo, it just went through me. When you change the lyric, because we're used to saying, God is for me. We got that from, you know, Romans 8, if God be for us, who could be against us? We've heard that so much, we don't even hear what we're saying anymore. But when you said, I am for me, not against me, I was like, okay, basically I don't need to teach now, because that's pretty much what I'm talking about today. Let me get back to this past Thursday. So the verse that I always refer to is when God comes to talk to Adam and Eve. And again, I believe this is allegorical. I just want you to know. I don't personally believe there was a literal Adam and Eve in a Garden of Eden. I hope that doesn't shock you. I believe the earth is billions of years old. I don't necessarily think we came from apes, but I do believe there was evolution. There's no doubt about it. They have found caves in around Uganda where there are humanoids and hominids in the same cave together. So, you know, when the Bible talks about the Nephilim and the giants, that's there is scientific proof. And so when Moses was talking about the earth being created in 6 24-hour periods, he was speaking poetically. He wasn't speaking as a scientist. That being said, the Genesis story is powerful, and Genesis 1, 2, and 3 has everything to do with how you think, the world that you create. We all were born into our own Garden of Eden. You had no control over, well, you may have had some control over how you were put into it, but you definitely have control over how you develop that garden, how you develop, and what word did you just say? Yeah, yeah. And so the whole thing about Adam calling the animals, that's not about animals. That's about you. Whatever you call something. If you call a bad day, then God says, all right, you know, it's a bad day. Which is why when God calls out to Adam, y'all got to bear with me. I'm feeling this really strong, and I'm not even faking. Because that just went through me when you said, I am for me, not against me. All right, I've got to say this. God calls out, Adam, where are you? Adam runs and hides. Adam finally says, I heard you calling for me in the garden, and I hid because I was afraid, and I hid because I was naked. And in chapter 2 is where God brought the animals to Adam to see what he would name them. So what that means is Adam is given the authority on the earth to decide what the reality is. He's God in the earth. Yeah. Yes. The creator, you said it, the creator created creators. This whole thing about you sitting back waiting for God to do something, you're wasting your time. That's not why you were put here, to wait and see what's God going to do. Like, you're so wasting your time. Whatever and whoever God is looking at you saying, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Decree a thing and I'll establish it. And if you want to call that him and believe the Judeo-Christian God, that's the God I know. So I have no argument with you on that. But because God said, if you call a kangaroo, I'll have to call it a kangaroo. If you call a zebra, I'll have to call it a zebra. So if you call yourself naked, then I have to call you naked. If you call yourself afraid, then I have to call you afraid. I don't see you that way. Your eating of the tree makes no difference to me, but because it's caused you to perceive yourself differently, you called yourself less than, so I have no choice but to call you less than because I gave you the authority on the earth. Now, I've said that before. That's not new. We've been saying that for years. Here's the part, and I haven't not said it, but I haven't said it. Because the question is, I'm going to show you this verse out of the Concordant Literal Version. The question is, who told you you were naked? Now, we've talked about that. Like, who told you you were poor? Who told you you were stupid? Who told you you were ugly? Who told you you were whatever? So there, I'm telling you, through my years of counseling, most issues that people have is people, they're under the spell of somebody else. Somebody else has spoken words over them, and they have believed those words, and those words have become their reality. That's basically what counseling is you trying to undo the spell that somebody's under because somebody told you. And it usually happens in childhood. Somebody tells you. And if a parent or an authority figure doesn't tell you something positive, just the negative pull of the world is like undertow, and it will cause you to fill in the blanks. And unless you're surrounded by positive people, you will end up saying, you'll end up self-sabotaging. So I've been teaching this for years. Who told you you were naked? I've even put it on Facebook before just as a hypothetical question. Who told you you were naked? And some people get it. Some people don't. You know, some people think, I wasn't naked today. I'm not talking to you. Let he who has ears hear. Because what I mean is, who told you you were poor? Who told you you were less than? Who told you you were stupid? But the implication, I've never said it, but the implication has always been, well, the serpent told him he was naked, right? I mean, isn't it kind of that, I've never said it, but isn't that what's sort of been implied? And Spirit really wanted me to set the record straight on this today. Because it wasn't the serpent. And I've kind of said that, but I haven't really said it. Who told you you were naked? Well, I said I was. In response to, well, let me show you. Woo, Jesus, help me get this said. This is Genesis 3, verses 9 through 11. This is the Concordant Literal Version, which is straight out of the Hebrew, and the Hebrew is always in present tense. So here's how it says. And calling is Yahweh Elohim to the human. And he is saying to him, Adam, where are you? And saying is he to him, the sound of you walking here I in the garden, and fearful am I, for naked am I, and I am hiding. This was where all religion began. This idea, and religion isn't just going to church with stained glass windows and an organ. Religion is any belief system that you have created to try to hide who you really are. And most people do it through most people in the Bible Belt here do it through religion. But religion isn't just going to church. There are people that call themselves atheists that are very religious. They don't realize they have a creed. They have a doctrine. They have, you know what? Everybody's got a doctrine. It may or may not have come from the Bible, but everybody's got a doctrine, a belief system. There's a set of beliefs that you buy into by which you create your reality, and God, the only thing that whatever and whoever God is has to do with it is he, she, it created you to create it. But this idea that I see the hand of God, and like for instance, somebody posted this week, and I thought this was so insightful. With the hurricane that just happened, and people's houses underwater, and still are, you know, it's like, I can't imagine. I've never had to evacuate my home for a disaster. I'm sure that's got to do something to your head. I'm sure that's got to be traumatic. Even if nobody dies, just the idea of seeing your stuff underwater, I don't even know how to empathize with it. And I know I grew up on the 91st Psalm, you know, 1,000 will fall at my side, 10,000 at my right hand. I mean, I knew a family who lived in an apartment complex that burned, and every unit in that complex burned except theirs. So I've got all kind of stories like that. The problem with that story, however, is the person who did lose everything, whose child did die in it, when you're given your big praise report about, look what God did for me, look what God did for me, they can't, even if they don't realize they're internalizing this, they're thinking, well, what's wrong with me? Why didn't God do that for me? Now, I'm not telling you not to expect the best. We went over, Friday night we went out to eat, and when Mom texts Ken, I always know that means something's gone wrong in the house, and Dad can't fix it. So she thought their refrigerator had gone on the clink, and that she was afraid everything was going to melt in the freezer and everything. And I could hear, when he checked the message, I could hear her voice on the phone. He was telling me, I said, no, I already heard. I said, ask her if she wants us to come over, because I just knew we just need to go over and look at it, or otherwise I'm going to tell her no, and then I'm going to get in bed tonight and go, you're going to regret this one day that you didn't go look at her refrigerator. There's probably nothing wrong with it, but you got to go ease that woman's mind so you can go home and go to sleep. I don't know if you've ever had it, if you've ever been an only child with elderly parents, but it's a head trip all the time. Well, that's how they knew about it, because they did get an ice cream. I said, well, Dad, you're not even supposed to be giving Dad ice cream anyway. She said, it's his only joy in life. I said, all right, I'm just telling you, that's why he doesn't feel good, because he's not supposed to be eating sugar. Well, anyway, it's going to be a while, but we'll be out there. So we schlepped out there, got there about 10 o'clock Friday night. And usually Ken walks in and knows immediately what it was, but he couldn't figure it out. And he stood there and looked at the manual, and we couldn't figure it out and couldn't figure it out and couldn't figure it out. We sat there long enough to finally said, look, I don't think we're going to get an answer tonight. Your frozen stuff, Don came over and got that and took it to his freezer, especially the ice cream. I said, well, when we bring food over Sunday night, we'll check it again. If not, we'll call Kenmore. We'll call the Kenmore guy. Here's the number. We'll get somebody out. We'll get it fixed. But in the meantime, before we left, I put my hands on it, and I said, I want you to start working again. Begin. It may be a coincidence. Last night, I called. I said, what's going on with your refrigerator? She said, what's the craziest thing? It's like it went through a metamorphosis. It's like it died, and it came back to life. Everything's fine. Everything's freezing. I said, well, we'll look at it Sunday night, but I think I spoke it back to life. I don't know. Because sometimes, you know, a prophet's not without honor except in his own country. So sometimes Mom does it. You know what I mean? Mom's not sure I shut up the dog. You know what I mean? She's like, I think those people think you're too. I'm just telling you. I told the dog, shut up. It might have been a coincidence. I'm just telling you, I spoke to your refrigerator, and it's working fine now. And she didn't argue with me this time. I said, you know what? I can do no mighty miracles in my hometown. If you say, it's not this Joseph the carpenter's son, I'm not going to be able to. I can do no mighty miracles here because of your unbelief. So she's like, all right, I do believe. Help thou my unbelief. I thought, all right, that's all right. So I'm saying, you're wasting your time praying for stuff. Just speak it, fix stuff. Like now, I don't want to lose my Jesus take the wheel clause for those times that you do feel overwhelmed and you're like, oh, where's an AA group? I need a higher power right now. So sometimes just the sheer pressure of feeling like you're totally responsible for your life is overwhelming. So I get the need for, I need a higher power. I'm not taking that away from you. I'm just saying, I am for me. All right, look what he says here. And saying is he to him, did anyone tell you that you are naked? I don't know if you ever walked on somebody that was changing or whatever. If they're really naked, they know. I mean, like, there's no, like, you don't just walk in and go, who told you you were naked? I mean, you could tell they are. You don't have to ask. So clearly, God does not see Adam as naked. I nearly wish there had been another word, because we associate nakedness with something that this is not talking about. When God came to see him, it wasn't like Adam's going, let me find a fig leaf. I mean, first of all, if you're going to believe God created him, God already knew what he looked like. So, you know what I mean? It's like, this must not be talking about nudity as we know it. This isn't a modesty issue. And when they fashion leaves together, the actual word is tunic. It's not loincloth. They're not covering their private parts. They're trying to create something that made them feel like divinity again. Because when their perception changed, they lost the idea of divinity, what we call the fall of man. God never saw it. I'm telling you, people, God never saw it. What about Jesus dying on the cross? Jesus died on the cross for people that believed that God thought they were naked. Why else do you think Jesus was naked on the cross? I mean, Jesus was literally, that was part of the execution, was not just the pain, but it was the humiliation of it. To put somebody naked on a cross and nail their hands so they can't, your instinct is to cover yourself with your arm. You can't do that. You're exposed. He said, if I am lifted up, oh, Lord. I don't even like to have a picture taken of me up this way, because it's not a good angle. So if you're on a cross and you're lifted up, it's the most naked, the most humiliated, the most what? So it's Jesus saying, you think you're disconnected from God. Paul tapped into it. Paul came along and said, you were alienated from God. Where? In your minds. So he says, did anyone tell you that you were naked? From the tree of which alone I instruct you to avoid eating, from it did you eat. Now, I'm not going to read all these verses to you, but this is what happens. Adam says, well, Adam never answers the question. He never acknowledges the question. He says, the woman you gave me that. So it's blame, blame, blame. Always watch out for those people that think everybody's out to get them. When somebody's super paranoid and they think everybody's, there's something wrong with that. You can't go through life, and I'm not telling you to be stupid. Jesus said, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But you can't go through life thinking everybody's out to get you. If you think the system is against you, and I know there's systematic racism. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just the building blocks of the universe. If you think the system is rigged against you, you self-sabotage every minute of the day. What you have to say is, well, if the system is rigged, I'm going to find a way to beat the system. I'll be the exception to the rule. That's how you meet your creator in the cool of the day. So he says, it's the woman you gave me. It's her fault. It's your fault. Then the woman says, well, it's the serpent that spoke to me. And they get this whole, you can't take this literally or it doesn't make sense. Because he goes on to say, well, we're going to have to remove them from the garden, because now they've eaten from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If they eat from the tree of life, they'll be like gods. Well, they just said two chapters ago, let us make man in our image. So if you take this literally, it's just convoluted. You've got to hear this thing spiritually. But here's the part, in all these years of teaching, I never saw it, at least not like I see it now. The serpent had very little to do with this. The only thing the serpent did was bring up a conversation. Has not God said? To which, if you're going to follow this narrative, Eve should have said, because he says, has God not said if you eat of this tree, you'll be like him? What she should have said is, we already are like him. We were created, that was the reason we're here. It would have been the end of the conversation. This is what I never saw before. It's not what somebody says to you. It's the situation that becomes the catalyst that causes you to say something to yourself. It's like, you know, they'll say sometimes when children are divorced, when their parents divorce, the children think it's their fault. You think, well, why would a kid even think that? Because if somebody doesn't tell you otherwise, you respond to a crisis and you have to say something about it, so you end up saying to yourself the lowest common denominator. Well, this must be my fault. I'm not telling you not to take ownership of things that you have done in your life, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that you've been blamed for that you did not do. I've been accused of things I'm like, I'm just not going to accept that. That's just not true. That's not true. If you believe it's true, it becomes your truth. Some people go through their whole life living somebody else's truth. Well, let me take that back. Responding to somebody else's influence and self-inflicting a lie. Who told you you were naked? Adam didn't say the serpent. He said, I did eat of the tree because the woman you gave me told me to. But he didn't. The naked thing was his idea. You know, it's strange. I went through a little altercation with somebody. This has been a good while back. Online, somebody was writing something. And what they wrote to me is, you're not better than me. And I thought, where did that come from? Why would you even, where's that come from? I've never even thought that I'm better than you. I can't even trace anything I've ever said that would cause you to even have to say that to me. And I thought, I'm telling you, I've been around rich people, I've been around successful people, I've met movie stars. In a course of watching an hour or two of television, I tell Ken so many people that I sometimes go, you know I'm not making this up, right? Because it's not like they're people I'm friends with, but we'll be, you know, we'll watch TV and I go, we passed them on the street one time on Fifth Avenue. It's true. Judah could tell you, we've seen all, they wouldn't know me if I walked into a crowd, but I have some story I can tell you. I met him, I saw him on Broadway. I've met a lot of famous people in my life. It has never one time crossed my mind they're better than me. Ever, ever. Actually, if I see somebody that's very confident, I think, oh, well, they must have achieved certain things in life that made them have that kind of confidence. Or they're an idiot to think that they're that great because they're not all that great. But I still don't connect the dots that I'm better than them. And when that, you know, sometimes somebody will say something and you think, wow, that was very revelatory what you just said. Why would you even think that? I mean, I remember as early as I was in first grade, my dad, we pastor church in Macon, and he worked with this woman. I remember Miss Agnes Claire Arnold was her name, and she used to go into the prisons there in Macon. And I would go with him sometimes, and I remember going, standing on a piano bench and singing Jesus Loves Me for the inmates, and I remember them crying. I grew up seeing incarcerated people. It never one time crossed my mind to say, I'm better than you. If anything, I think, you know what? If I had your same set of circumstances and had the same realities you're dealing with, I very probably would have ended up in the same place. So I never thought, ever. I mean, we walk in the city a lot. And when you walk, especially around my building, indigent people are everywhere. So you get used to saying, nobody, I can't do it. And because people come up to you, I'm not exaggerating. And like on any given Saturday, if we walk all day, it'd be from 15 to 20 people that come up to you and say, "Have you got a minute?" And I'm used to going, "No, I can't do it tonight. Not tonight." I mean, I always make eye contact. If somebody says I'm hungry, I've bought more food than anybody in this place has. But I also am used to going, "No, I can't do it tonight," and it's no big deal. We walked to dinner one night this week, and I'm just, you could see the guy when you're walking down this, like, "I know, here it comes." And so I was in no zone. I'm like, "No, I can't do it tonight. I can't do it tonight." And this guy with no legs comes wheeling up on a wheelchair. And I'm like, "Ah, crap. I can't tell this guy no." And I can't say I don't have any cash because I do have a 20. I have a $20 bill in there. Because usually I don't have cash. I usually say, "No, I just have a debit card," which is the truth. That man, I was like, "No, no, no." I'm like, "Oh, legless guy." And I'm going to be honest with you. I actually looked and said, "Please tell me I've just got a couple of ones." And he was like, "Nope, just a big, nice 20. I knew. I thought, I'm going to have to give it to him. Because if I go, there's no way. I know. I have to deal with myself when I get home. I'm going to get home. I'm going to see that man coming up Peachtree, you know. And I'll be hearing, like, "You know the stuff you spend $20 on and never think about it." No, I took that out. And I said, "Here, get something to eat." And he, in his hands, he said, "I can get so much more than something to eat from this." I'm like, I was like so happy. Because now, you have to understand, I'm a city boy. And I have people come up and tell me a story that already told me that story. Like one night we were walking out of Eats, and a guy came up with a story, and I said, "You already told me this story." He said, "No, I didn't." I said, "Yeah, about a week ago I was on Peachtree, and we gave you, I didn't give you money, but Ken gave you money." And, you know, some guy said, "Well, you bought me something to eat." I said, "I bought you something to eat last week." I mean, I'm telling you, I live with these people. So I'm not just the you know, indifferent rich white man that doesn't care. Like, no, I'm feeding a lot of people. So I say, but I also say no a lot, but not with the wheelchair guy. I'm like, okay. I mean, if all I'd had was 100, I would have had to give that to him because why am I telling that? There was some point in that. Huh? There was some point. Oh, no, yes, that's what it was. Even when I look, I'm going to be honest with you. There's sometimes when I drive on the underpass next to my building and I see that people are starting to camp out and pee on the sidewalk and stuff, you know, I'm going to tell you the truth. There's a part of me that goes, "Oh, y'all, please don't set up a tenement place next to my building like y'all had ever on Pine." I'm just going to tell you. I do. But if somebody comes up to me and says they're hungry, I always feed them. And I never think I'm better than them. I think, "Oh, y'all, please get it together. Move to another block." Am I being too real? But here's the point of this. Who told you you were naked? I want to talk to you a little bit before we close today about self-talk. But let me show you one more Bible story. This is New Testament. This is John chapter 4. This is Jesus in Samaria with the woman at the well. This is John chapter 4, verse 20. Something, that must be 21 through 24, my bad, in the Message. It says, this is where he talks to the woman, and he says, "But the time is coming, it has in fact come, when what you're called will not matter, and where you go to worship will not matter. It's who you are and the way you live that count before God." Go ahead. "Your worship must engage your spirit in the pursuit of truth. That's the kind of people the Father is out looking for, those who are simply and honestly themselves before him in their worship." Do you know what he's talking about? Remember? I mean, Jesus, as a Jewish man speaking to a Samaritan woman at this time, would have been like an African-American man speaking to a white woman in Alabama in the 50s. Okay? Or even some places today. Because remember, he says, "Give me to drink." And she's like, "Why are you even talking to me?" And he says, "If you knew the water I have, you'd know you'll never be thirsty again if you drink this water." This is the woman at the well. And she says, "Well, tell me where I can get this water." And he says, "Go call your husband." And without blinking, she says, "Well, I don't have a husband." And he says, "Well, you have well said, for you've had five husbands, and the man you're living with now is not your husband. But then he goes on to say, the Father is looking for people like you. What, people that can't find the right man? No, people who aren't scrambling around in the garden trying to sew fig leaves together. People who he says God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. You can't know God until you know yourself. And if you're still lying about yourself, when people ask me, what was your relationship with God like after you came out? Better than ever, because I told the full truth about myself. I have nothing to hide. I'm bulletproof. I'm not scared. If somebody says, oh, that's so gay, I'm like, well, okay. You know, I don't see that as an insult. And he says the Father's looking for people who just tell the truth. Because people, so much of, not all of church, but so much of church is just an elaborate masquerade party. People go to church and they put on this mask and they act like somebody else for a couple of hours and then they go back to their life. Totally. Totally. That's why when somebody asks me, do you have a gay church? I'm like, no, I don't have a gay church. I don't want a gay church. I want a church where people can walk in and say, this is my husband, this is my wife, whatever. And nobody says, what? They're just like, oh, okay, hey, nice to meet you. That's the world I live in. That's the world I'm creating, where people just are themselves with no agenda. I'm telling you, I'm never going to march in a gay pride parade. That's not even my radar screen. I do, however, love that I've created an environment here, that we've created an environment where that's not a deal breaker for somebody. You know, that people can just, like, this is who they are. Okay, fine. Because Jesus tells this woman, and you know what her response was? She runs into town and says, come meet a man who told me everything I ever did. She wasn't put off by it. She was like, yeah, I've been through some stuff. I've had five husbands. She's not trying to hide it. And he says, this is how the Spirit works. The Spirit works through people knowing who they are, telling the truth about who they are, and being okay with that truth. Let me show you some, there's some quotes I want to show you. This is, Gino Norris says this, your self-talk is the channel of behavior change. The next one, Beverly Engel says this, turn down the volume of your negative inner voice and create a nurturing inner voice to take its place. When you make a mistake, forgive yourself, learn from it, and move on instead of obsessing about it. Equally important, don't allow anyone else to dwell on your mistakes or shortcomings or to expect perfection from you. Meaning, if you make a mistake, own it, let it go, move on. But see, if you don't tell the truth about it, you just push it down somewhere, and that's why it keeps resurfacing, and you keep putting Band-Aids on it and try to make yourself better, feel better about it, and just say, oh, well, they started it, or they shouldn't have said that. Well, it doesn't matter. At a certain point, you just have to say, this is why I told you this the other day, I've never doubted I was anointed. I've never. I've doubted every other thing about my life at one time or another. I've wondered, am I a good husband? Am I a good father? Am I a good friend? I've even wondered, am I a good pastor? I've never asked myself if I'm anointed. I've always, with every fiber of my DNA, I've always known that. Now, just because you're anointed doesn't mean you don't have some character issues to work on. You still have a personality. You can still get your feelings hurt. You can still take things personally. What I have found, however, is the more evolved you become, it's like it's not even an effort not to take things personally anymore. I mean, really, you can understand how Jesus could say, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they do. I mean, you talk about liberty when you don't even have to, like, I want to explain this to my social media people. If I delete a comment or even take it so far as to unfriend you or block you, I'm not afraid of you. If you want to argue about something, I can argue, and I'm going to give you some fair warning. I can usually win an argument. I've dealt with more confrontation in my life than the average person has. I'm not afraid of that. I just don't care about it anymore. Like when somebody wants to send me some Bible verses or whatever, I'm like, sweetie, you don't even know. You're so ignorant of the scriptures, there'd be no way for me to even argue this point with you. It's like you're so clueless, I can't even engage. Like some people say, well, you should argue with me about it. No, baby, no. You're so uninformed. It would be like arguing calculus with somebody that's a calculus professor. If you don't know anything about it, you just need to, like, there's some things I know. That's not my thing. You saw that picture of Stephen stretching me. I was thinking, because he's pulling my arms back, I was like, dear Lord, I'd hate to get in a fight with this guy. Because if he pinned me, I would have no, like, don't ever get mad at me, because I like he's pinning me back. I'm like, he says, say when. I'm like, when? When? Yeah, that wasn't a fake picture. That was like, oh. I mean, I like it, but shoo-hoo-hoo. So I know there's no point in me saying, let's go out in this parking lot and see. Because I already know the answer to that. And he already knows the answer to that. If I went crazy one day and said, let's take this outside of it, I think he would have presence of mind to say, no, I'm not going to take you out in the parking lot. And I'm not going to do that. Now, there might be some other areas I'm like, I can win there. But not there. You have to know, like, well, no, this is like, he's bigger than me. He's a bodybuilder. Like, that's not rocket science. Like, nobody, there's nobody saying, you think you could take him? No, of course I couldn't. Some people are. Yes. That's what happens to some people. When they're inebriated or whatever, they think. I used to have a little chihuahua that would bark at the German Shepherd. It's like, and he would just get right in that German Shepherd's face. And I think, you have no concept of your size. That dog could literally swallow you in one bite. And he doesn't know. And there's something to be said for that. That's how David beat Goliath. Because he did not, well, you know the story. I've told you this so many times, but it's my only NBA story, but way back in the day, this was back when Dominique Wilkins played for the Hawks. I was asked to be the chaplain. So I'm there. I took Jared was little then. He got a picture of Dominique where I'm sitting. You don't realize how ginormous these NBA are. That's when they were playing the 76ers with Manute Bol, the guy from Africa who's like, he's over 7 feet tall. I mean, they literally are giants. They're just like the biggest men you've ever seen. So for some insane reason, I chose the text of when the Israelites went into Canaan, and it says, we saw the giants, and we saw ourselves as grasshoppers. And it's a great teaching about how the Israelites, because they saw themselves as grasshoppers, they were. But I said, there was a white guy who used to play on the name John Konkak. He had ginormous feet. And he's sitting right next to me. And I said, I mean, they had to be like size 15, 16. I said, have you ever felt insignificant and felt like you were a grasshopper and there were giants? And all these NBA players look at me blankly like, no. I mean, they are giants. As I said it, I looked down at John Konkak's foot and I thought, no. You haven't, have you? And this is like, what the hell am I, why am I using this? Because I love that teaching. And most places you go, people relate to it. Like, oh yeah, I've self-sabotaged all my life. Not these guys. They might have thought other things, but they never thought they were small. Lesson learned from that. Always find the appropriate scripture. That one wasn't it. You follow that into what was I thinking? All these years later, the Hawks never invited me back. They never said, we need to get that guy that tapped into our feelings. There's no. Like some of the things that people say, like money can't buy happiness. Well, it can buy, a little bit. It can buy a little bit. It can't fix everything, but it can make you happy. I mean, it's just true. Like people say, well, you know, I used to hear a preacher say, all those people out in the club tonight, they ain't having fun. They may regret it tomorrow, but I'm pretty sure they're having a little fun tonight. I mean, for right now, if they are miserable, they're not aware of their misery. It's not going to fix their problems, but to say they're not having a good time, that's a lie, because obviously they're having a good time. I mean, on Friday night, sometimes we'll drive down the streets and some of these clubs around here, people will be lined around the block at 11 o'clock trying to get in a club. Well, yeah. This is the great Nathaniel Hawthorne. This is archaic language, but very well said. He says, the sick in mind and perhaps in body are rendered more darkly and hopelessly so by the manifold reflection of their disease, mirrored back from all quarters in the deportment of those about them. They are compelled to inhale the poison of their own breath in infinite repetition. Who told you you were sick? Who told you you were naked? The answer is, well, I told myself, in response to eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Why was that the catalyst? Because here's the thing. If you see everything in your life filtered through the paradigm of good versus evil, you're going to constantly be trying to figure out how to navigate, you're just going to be in survival mode all the time. If, however, you just say, look, I see everything through the tree of life. I don't see everything as good or bad. It's just life. This past week was the year anniversary of my father-in-law passing. So Ken wanted the family to go visit his grave and honor year anniversary, and they did, and we did, and it was nice. And we stood around the, I'm sort of the, for his family, I'm the one that always asks the blessing, always, you know, I'm the guy. So he asked me to sort of coordinate it. And I said, is there anything anybody wants to say about Mr. Monty? And different people were sharing anecdotes and stuff. I said, well, I'm just going to tell you this, and I hope you all agree, I hope you can agree with this. I said, I know Ken was ready to take his dad home and go through hospice and all that kind of stuff because that's the type of person he is. I said, frankly, I'm happy that he was spared all of that. I said, I know y'all didn't want to lose him, but I've seen people go through leukemia, and it's horrible, and I'm glad he was spared so much of that indignity. And that doesn't mean I'm happy he died. I'm saying I'm glad. Because I know a year ago on a Sunday, he was with him. He said, we took him to the hospital. And I, as soon as he texted me, I thought, well, they're not going to take him out. He didn't think that. He was ready, prepared to, you know, he was ready to order a bed and, you know, walk with him to the last mile. I'm like, if he's not going to get better on this side, let's let him go and rest. Now, you decide which thing it is. It doesn't mean you don't cry over it. It doesn't mean you don't miss somebody. But you don't see it through the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's just a thing that happens. You know, when people say, do you want to live to be 120? Let me give you that. I want to live to be 120 as long as I'm healthy and in my right mind. Just the idea of seeing how long I can go and be miserable, that doesn't sound good to me. I think you need to define your terms. Because if you just say, I want to live a long life, well, I want to live a long quality life. Because if I'm just miserable and in pain and sick, no, I'd rather just go on, you know, go towards the light, Carol Ann. You know, I'm just telling you. And I'm probably, because I've been around death and dying my whole life, I probably am too matter-of-fact about it. I'm just like, well, you know, if it's time to go, go on. If we can get better, then let's get better. But let's not stay in that in-between state for your sake. Just to stay there and be miserable? No, that's not abundant life. You got to define your terms. Like I've told you, there's another story I've told you many times. I'm an Alec Baldwin fan. We were born on the same day. Not just the same date, same day. For years, I've thought, oh, I want to tell Alec Baldwin we were born the same day. I want to meet Alec Baldwin and tell him we were born on the same day. We go to New York for my birthday. He's in a Broadway show. The night before my, it's like 15 minutes till Alec Baldwin's and my birthday. We're standing outside the theater. He comes out signing people's autographs. Alec, I was born on the same day. We're both about to be, it was 5 years ago, I said, we're both about to be 55 in 15 minutes. He said, okay. And got in the limousine. And I realized I should have thought this through a little more. Because I thought the implication was, well, come on, let's be best buds. We're born the same day. Let's go do shots together. And I thought, well, I got exactly what I said. I said, I want to tell Alec Baldwin we're born the same day. I did. And that was all I got. You can't believe how blank he looked. He's like, all right. I'm like, no. I visualized this for years. You're not doing it right. This is, I should have thought this through. So if I say I want to live long, there needs to be an addendum to that. I want to live long and be healthy and you know, keep all my faculties. And look, again, that's not just something you do to say, I'm praying I'm going to live. You got to work at it. You can't eat crap every day and expect to be healthy. You can't not exercise your muscles and expect them not to atrophy. That's just a law of nature. So if you're going to live long and be healthy and prosper, then you have to take care of yourself now. I'm telling you, I want to think I'm the new face of 60, but I'm aware you can't eat like that. You're 60 now. There's some things you can't. You know what I mean? That's just a law of nature. You know, when you were a kid, remember, you got trick-or-treat. Jerry Seinfeld does a thing about going trick-or-treat. He says you'd have a whole bowl full, like you'd have so much candy in a bowl that it would be bowing on the top. You said at night you eat every piece of that candy. Wake up the next morning, feel fantastic. And I could remember I wasn't that much of a sugarhead, but I mean, I could mainline some candy. Not now. I'm telling you, yesterday I ordered a little turkey sausage with some eggs yesterday, and I was like, I just don't think I can eat meat anymore. Like, what is happening to me? And it was turkey. I'm not telling you not to. I'm just saying, because I said, I think that turkey sausage made my stomach feel weird. And he says, because you haven't been eating meat. I said, well, maybe you're right. I'm not telling you to be vegetarian. Don't send me messages about your chicken wings. I don't care. That's on you. I'm just saying, if you want to be prosperous, there's some things you got to do. I love that, you know, that thing you say when you look in somebody's palm. I can read palms. You see that M in your palm? That means you're going to have money in your life. Now turn it upside down. See that W? It means you're going to have to work for it. The harder you work, the luckier you become. All right, let's finish this up. Gavin Mills says this. I am often amused and sometimes amazed by the free-reign constructs of my mind. That is why I converse regularly with myself. I am one of my better friends. I am for me. I am not. Man, that makes me want to rethink that scripture. If I am for me, who can be against me? Because this is where your enemies come in. Sharks are drawn to blood. And the areas where you feel insecure and insignificant, people will come in and manipulate that area where you feel most vulnerable. If you already know who you are, it's like Jesus saying, Satan has come to me, but there's nothing in me. But it all comes out of you. And the more you know who you are, the less you have to prove to anybody. You're just like, yeah, I think you're great. I think I'm great. I want you to do well. I want me to do well. You don't have to be less than for me to be more than. There's enough abundance to go around. Let's all be great together. We're all in this together. But that comes from, if you don't have a healthy self-esteem, and a healthy self-esteem comes from not telling yourself constantly that you're naked, you know what Adam should have said? He shouldn't have been ashamed. He shouldn't have seen naked as something negative. I had to clean that up a little bit. Well, that's my point. There's a comedian I heard one time, just don't judge me on this. A comedian said, the other day, I'm in a hotel, didn't have a stitch of clothes on, and the maid walks in. Finally. No, don't quote me on that. But his point was, I'm not excusing sexual harassment. What I'm saying is, if you think nakedness should not have been a negative connotation. I'm not telling y'all to run around naked everywhere. I'm just saying the word took on negative baggage. Right. The shame, yes. Absolutely. I remember when I was a single dad, I had Jared and Christina, and I had them in the bathtub, and I'd ordered a pizza. The pizza guy came, Christina just up out of that bathtub, runs, opens up. The guy's like, okay. I said, excuse us. It's bath time, and dinner just arrived. Christina, get back in. But I thought, well, she just has no sense of shame. And there's always that moment when the first time you hear that click on the bathroom, like, oh, they've become self-conscious, which they should be. Again, I'm not telling you just to run around. You know, I'm not telling you that. I'm saying, when did body shaming get connected? Because it sure was a part of my growing up. We were always taught, man, are you kidding? Ooh. Right. Right. Exposed. Naked basically is transparent. He could have said, I became transparent and I hid from you. Whereas if you know who you are, then you're like, well, I've already told my story, and the story I tell to myself is a good one. I speak to myself. David was totally tapped into this. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that's within me. Bless his holy name. That's him speaking to himself. David encouraged himself in the Lord. Why art thou cast down on my soul? And why? Yes, he did. There was a time, remember when the Ark of the Covenant came in? And the thing is, David liked the ladies. You know what I'm saying? So when the Ark of the Covenant came in, he didn't strip off totally naked, but he was down to what they call an ephod, which would be like his underwear. And he was dancing, and his wife, Michal, saw him and judged him. She said, I know the naughtiness of your heart. You were dancing for those women. And the thing is, that probably wasn't out of character for David. That would be within the realm of possibility for him to be doing that. And what did he say? Because you have said this to me, now I will dance the much more wildly. And he wasn't punished. She was stricken with barrenness and never had a child after that. So God apparently looked at him and said, that David, I just can't make him feel ashamed. I mean, and I love it. The response should have been, yeah, baby, you know, I just got, you know, I just lost my head. You know, I'm sorry, baby, I won't do it again. He's like, next time I'm taking it all off. But you nearly, to walk in righteousness, consciousness, you nearly have to be that radical with it. Jesus was. How do you know about Abraham with you not even being 50 years old? Before Abraham was, I am. Baby, you can't say to a bunch of Jewish scholars, before Abraham was, I am. Do you know how many things are wrong with that statement? That's going to get you killed. And guess what? It did get him killed. And guess what? He said, well, I'll be back. You can crucify me, but in 72 hours, I'll be back. What? How do you kill that guy? Then finally, this guy Sam Owen says, via self-talk, we give our mind instructions on what we expect of ourselves, and so behave accordingly. Change the instructions, and we change the outcomes. I'm going to tell you just something as simple as this. If you're going to run in the morning, if you're going to walk, if you're going to work out, just something as simple as saying, I'm going to have a good workout today. You don't feel it immediately. As a matter of fact, you may feel just the opposite. There's some days you think, I don't want to do this today. If you just at least will say, I'm going to feel good today, I'm going to get stronger, I'm going to be better, you won't sense it immediately. But you watch, just a little bit, it may take an hour or so, but a little bit, you'll start having a really good workout, and you'll feel really good, and you'll be really happy that you did it. But if you constantly self-sabotage, I hate leg day, you're going to have a horrible leg day. You're going to get nauseous. I'm not saying you don't feel fatigue or soreness or whatever. If you're going to commit to something, you better be happy about it. I got to shut up, but I've become so aware of this that even, I told you this, like when the last time we were in California, we had such a good time and it went so fast. And we were packing up, about to go back to the airport, and I started to post, I'm not ready to go home yet. And something checked me. I thought, you know what? I don't need to put that out there because my words are powerful, and I don't want to drive to LAX and get on the plane and them say, we don't understand it. We've had some kind of mechanical difficulty. And I'm like, oh, crap. I have created obstacles. Either change your plans and stay another day or say, I can't wait to get back to my beautiful home. You know one reason why when we do go out of town, when I come back, if you'll notice, the first thing I'll do is I'll go to my window and take a picture of my view because I want to be blessed when I go out. I want to be blessed when I come back in. Because if I say, oh, I'm not ready to go home yet, I'm going to be sending out negative stuff and you're going to get there and, you know, something's going to be broken. There's going to be some, you know what I mean? It's going to be something. You go, oh, it always happens every time we go. Watch those words, always and never. Y'all stand up or I'm going to keep talking all day. I love talking about this all. Is this powerful? Did you get anything out of this? And again, it's not that I haven't said. The implication was the serpent told him that. That's kind of what's been implied. And it's not. The serpent said other things. But that serpent never said, ha, 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 you are naked. He said that. Selah. Play the takeout for the YouTube people, please.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form, and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit bishinthenow.com and click the Support tab.
If you're making a check,
then My Online Donation.
Make it to JESM.
When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month.
Danny will receive it.
Thank you for your investment in Metron.
Pay it forward. Bless somebody. You might want to bless Judah or take somebody to lunch or find a guy with no legs in a wheelchair. I'm telling you, you can't say, like, there's no way I'm going to tell this guy no. There's no way. You win. I speak over your inner monologue. I say that you bless yourself with the words of your mouth. And quite possibly the strongest thing that was said today was in the lyrics of his song, I am for me. I am not against me. Don't become your own best friend, not your own worst enemy. So I bless your thoughts. I bless your dreams. I bless the words of your mouth. I bless the thoughts that you think. You're going to have an excellent day. You're going to wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I'm going to rejoice and be glad. And I love you so much. See you next week. Bye.